جينيك نيت ونقرا عن الروز نومت ونوم الروز بياك اخي بايات بابوت ونفرار كنيت ونعي بلا البلايل ويشوفك
ورودابي. I was a student of anthropology in the 1970s, and I was really interested in the effects of large-scale processes of change on tribally organised people in Iran, and in particular on the settlement of nomads. And so I went in 1974 to southern Iran, and after a long and complicated story, which I won't go into, I actually met people in one area of the Zagros Mountains who were willing to have an anthropologist come and stay. And I spent 3 months living in the village with them then. And then I went back to England to kind of get approval for my PhD and to get funding to do my fieldwork, and came back in 1975 and spent about 16 to 18 months living with them again. And this was in, I focused on a whole tribal section, which was a main village, a number of small hamlets, and about 10, 15 nomadic groups that were still migrating, and a village in the summer quarters. And I didn't spend a lot of time in the village in the summer quarters, but this carpet that I'm showing you is based on a photograph taken of me in the summer quarters. At that time, not many of them had encountered a foreigner before. And not, they had things like radios, but I don't think anyone else had a camera. And I asked, I asked permission for taking photographs, and there was a bit of hesitation at first, but some people said okay. And then my practice was to, every time I took a pause in my fieldwork and went back to the provincial capital, Shiraz, for a shower, I would also get all my photographs developed and printed. And I took all the prints back with me and then would give them to the people in the photograph. So my photographs became quite popular, but so they were really, got really pleased about me taking photographs. And I've taken about 4,000 photographs from that period. But it was a single reflex camera where the light meter was built into it, but still you had to adjust it all. And it was too complicated for many people to really use. So for the most, I took pictures of them and gave them the pictures. But every now and then I met somebody who wanted to take a picture and wanted to take their own pictures. So I have got some pictures taken that they've taken of whatever they were doing. And I've got a few pictures where they took pictures of me. And so this is quite a rare picture of me from the 1970s, like 50 years ago. This is roughly what I looked like. I'm wearing the jeans, which I wore for a year and a half, and a long-sleeved shirt. I didn't wear any kind of Islamic hijab or clothes. The tribeswomen wore a very thin gauze scarf over their head, which you could still see their hair through, and so it wasn't a hijab in the sense that it's used now. And they didn't mind me not wearing something like that, so I didn't wear a head covering. I've got, my hair got longer and longer. This is towards the end of the period, so you can see my hair's quite long. But I did always wear a shirt which buttoned right up to the neck and which came right down to the sleeves came down to the wrists. And I always made sure that my trousers and my socks overlapped, so there was no, apart from my hands and my face, nothing else was showing. So that was my adjustment to their clothing system, and they liked that. We discussed it together, and they liked it. So here's me in my... the photographer wasn't quite good at taking the whole of me, so my feet are cut off, but I've got walking boots on and my jeans and my one of the three blouses that I had. I lived out of a rucksack for whole of this time. And I'm sitting on a mountain just outside of the village in the winter quarters. So it's very hot. It's in the summer, where normally the nomads wouldn't have been in this area in the summer. They would have gone into these high mountains where it's cooler, so the sheep and the goats had... They used altitude to keep a constant temperature for the sheep and the goats. So they wouldn't normally have been in the winter quarter, in the winter quarters in the summer, but some of them had settled there. And there's a young man who was taking me around, showing me there's a whole lot of archaeological sites near here. He was taking me to see them. And it's classic Oolitic limestone from the Zagros Mountains, which is, you could see whole shells. They would kind of fall out in your hand. It was crumbly limestone with masses and masses of fossils in it, and very, very rough and jagged. So I'm sitting on this chunk of rock with the mountains behind me with a perfect blue sky. And this guy has taken a photograph of me. I returned to England in 1976, and then the revolution happened in through 1978 to 1979. And a few years after that, I received a message from the people that I'd lived with to say, although I'd done nothing wrong, the fact that they had hosted me in their houses was being used against them by the new regime. So please would I not write anything? And would I not contact them? So I went for 16 years without any contact with this area at all, with the people or anything. It felt like, you know, a chunk of me had been amputated for that period. But then suddenly, the government of Iran, the Islamic Republic, wanted to get funding from the Food and Agriculture Organization of the United Nations for a program for settling nomads. And so they had to kind of prove their credentials, kind of acceptability to in the academic world. So all of the people who had studied nomads in the past were invited to a conference in Iran, and I was invited along. And I accepted the invitation on the condition that I would be allowed to go back to this area, which, after a little bit of argument, was allowed. And so I made contact with the people again, and I've had contact ever since. There's a way now that, you know, that now we're talking about children, grandchildren, great-grandchildren are contacting me and saying, you know, you took a photograph of my grandmother making bread in 1975 in this village. Could you send it to me? And other people are introducing themselves to me, sending me emails saying, I'm the great grandchild of this person. And they send me back a scan of the picture that I took of their great grandfather to introduce themselves to me now. And so there's a terrific interest in the work that I did then. To find out who was who, and it was a very tense time, there were conflicts happening all the time, and it was very difficult to do field work in a way that wouldn't intensify any of the arguments that were going on. And so I had to know who was who, and really know who I was talking to and who was talking to each other in any circumstances. So to do that, I had to learn all of their genealogy. I had to know all of the relations between all the people, and it was 2,500 people. So I have a genealogy of 2,500 people. I have these 4,000 photographs. I've got 50 sound recordings, and I've got sketch maps of all the villages and the tent camps and everything with who lived where. Because it was the only way I could work out who was who and who lived where and what was going on. It was kind of the root of the fieldwork that I could then do. There's a terrific interest in that material here. So I'm now in the process of digitising all of that material. And I've got an agreement with Durham University, which has a Centre for Middle Eastern Studies, that they will set up a website and we'll make all that material available to the people from there. But I also collected the whole gamut of the woven goods that they needed to be a nomad, because they stopped, lots of them had stopped being nomads, and they were trying to sell these things and they were getting nothing for them in Shiraz. So I said, well, you know, I'd really like a collection if I can buy them. And so they found the best, and each kind of thing that you're carrying has a different kind of bag with a different name and a different weave and a different thickness. And so I had about 16 of these different woven goods, and I've donated those to the Oriental Museum in Durham, so that they will be alongside then the collection of written materials in the library in Durham. And when I went to Durham to donate all these things to the museum, two people from the village were actually in England at that time. And so I invited them to come too. And they were just so pleased at the way that the crafts from their area were being treated with such respect and reverence, really, in the museum. And then they took me completely by surprise by, in front of the museum director and everybody else who was there, announcing that they had a gift for me and making a speech that this was a gift in thanks and recognition of what I'd done for them, which isn't really anything. And they laid out this absolutely fantastic carpet as a gift for me, which was just absolutely stunning. So it was a gift from these two people, but on behalf of this tribal section, to me for collecting fieldwork material that's been the basis of my career and to which I thank them. But they're now grateful to me for keeping it and making it available back to them. Okay, so I'd like to describe this carpet. It's a picture of me taken in 1976, and because I gave all the I've given all my photographs to the people in Iran, they chose which photograph they wanted to use, and they like this picture best. And they sent it to a company in Tabriz, which is in the very northwest of Iran. And the company is called Sherkata Artafash Tabriz. And they pixelated the photograph and designated which colour should be used for each knot. And then they sent this pattern for the carpet to one of the best carpet weaving areas in the southeast of Iran. So this is all using the whole the strongest national skills now in carpet making. So it isn't a local product, it's a national thing. And this is the Gere Institute in Jahran. And the weaver is Hanum Fatimeh Latifi. And the kind of supervisor, the coordinator of the weaving was Hanum Hangame Yusufi, who is the head of the Gere Institute. And it was woven between the 6th of June 2019 and the 13th of September 2019. But that sounds like a long time until you see the density of the weaving. The carpet is 66 centimetres by 90 centimetres. The number of knots is 500 knots in one direction and 651 knots in the other direction. The number of strands is 50 to every 7 centimetres. So that gives the density of it. The main strands are in silk. The weft, the thread that goes the other way, is cotton. And the pile, the weaving, is in merino wool and silk. There's 147 colours used. Four of them are silk, especially the white and the light blue for my clothes, and the white for the Oolitic limestone, because they've woven the limestone with the mixture of silk and wool, so it's actually got the bumps and crevices of the limestone textured into the carpet. And it is the most beautiful thing I've ever seen. It just took my breath away when it was presented to me, and Mr. and Mrs. Razmajui were there and made a speech, and I just burst into tears. I mean, I've never been given such a beautiful present. And the love and care that's gone into it is just absolutely phenomenal. Making the effort to source the best carpet designers and the best carpet weavers in Iran. And then it's also kind of takes me aback to see a picture of myself from that many years ago. My hair is a bit more ginger than I think it really was. My hair was, but the sun did bleach it a lot. One thing I notice is that in Iran, when you sit relaxed, you let your hands drop and your fingers are relaxed. Whereas in England, we usually clasp our hands tight together. And I noticed that I've picked up the Persian way of sitting with my hands relaxed. And also there's this brown blob to the side, and that's the bag. I've got the strap over my shoulder, and this is the bag that I carried my camera and my tape recorder and my notebook in wherever I went. So it's really nice to see that that's represented in the picture as well. And the whole texturing of the trees with the from the darkest, almost black green, through a sagey colour green to a very light green, but it's the height of the pile varies with it as well. And the Oolitic limestone, the weave of the silk, the white stitches, knots, are done differently to the way that the brown merino wool knots are done. So there's actually a... you get the texture of the limestone in the weave as well. And it just takes me aback just every time I look at it. It's just so absolutely amazing. And for them to take such care and such, to go to all this trouble and then to carry it over to England and present it to me in public, and for me to be able to see that as a reminder of this relationship I have with them all the time, it's just phenomenal. I have this beautiful carpet at home at the moment. I haven't framed it because I keep taking it places to show people, and if I get it framed, then it's not going to be so mobile. But eventually I'm going to find some way of framing it and putting it on the wall. And then when I die, it will go to the museum in Durham, the Oriental Museum, where they've got all the carpets and the nomadic woven goods and the traditional women's dress that I've already donated to them. So it will be part of the collection from that tribal area. So that's the story behind this carpet.